Hello then everyone, and welcome to this webinar today. I'm Francis Seeley from Robinet 21 and from a local group called Enfield Voices. And this is one of the many webinars we do that covers a wide range of issues. Now today we're going to interview Anthony Fisher. We've already interviewed him. We've interviewed him about his business, what he does in his business, how he's trying to make his business sustainable and green. But in developing that business, he did it around an idea. And that's made him realize that ideas are important. And that's what we're going to talk about today, the power of ideas, how important they are, and how invigorating they can be and motivating us to do things and to think differently. So, Anthony, thanks for coming on again. And
thank you for inviting me, Francis. Thank you.
Well, I mean, it's great to have you here, but, you know, maybe we could start just, you know, in case people watch this one and they haven't watched the last one, if you could tell us very briefly a little bit about yourself.
Yes, so I'm by profession an industrial chemist, fellow of the Royal Society of Chemistry. Now, I started out life as a medical student, but soon realised, as I said before, I didn't have the memory. So I went to the Enfield Technical College, where I followed the HNC, LRIC route for qualification, suited my brain. But the day release where I could study for one day between, I think it was 9 and 10, and work for the rest of the week. So I worked for a big company, then a smaller company. Then in 1988, I decided to set up on my own, which I did in February, it was 1988, and Fisher Research was born.
Okay, and we did talk about that in the last webinar. And in this one, we're talking about the power of ideas. I mean, why do you think ideas are important?
Well, I think it starts with the fact that without an idea, we can't do anything unless it's an instinctive reaction. Because an idea, it starts with that. That's why dictators tend to shoot poets and artists first, because they are the ones with the ideas. They're the ones that could be subversive, because I think ideas lead to change. And without change, I don't think the community or any society can continue to exist. You know, if we think about reproduction, when there's an exchange of genetic material in fertilization, the genes are all mixed up because it's change. That's random change. Whereas I think without, I suppose if you don't have ideas, things go on as they were, have always gone on. And I don't think that's healthy. It's static.
So what do you say to those people who, you know, don't like ideas? That's a waste of time. Talking is a waste of time. Just go out and do things. Don't mess around thinking about ideas.
Well, first of all, people who have ideas do things. I mean, I had an idea in what must have been in the autumn of 87 to start my business. And in 88, in February, I'd started it. So I had an idea and I did it. So I don't think it's too much this either or in our thinking nowadays. You can be do two things at once. Though I'm a bloke, I can think and I can do things. So I can do two things as well as breathe. So I think it's wrong to say that people, the implication of what you said is that people with ideas can't do anything. That's totally wrong. I mean, you need an idea before you can do anything new. Perhaps if it's something that's been done for the last several hundred years, and you don't need an idea, you don't need to think about it, just do it. But how boring to have to do the same thing that your dad did, your grandparents did, your grandmother did. Dreadful situation.
You know, ideas in fact have changed the world, haven't they? I mean, if you look at Copernicus and the way we view the universe, if we look at people like John Locke and the way he influenced the American Constitution, and if we look at John Maynard Keynes, which changed the view of economics to the extent that it led to the foundation of the welfare state. I mean, ideas can change mindsets and culture, can't they?
Well, they can and they do. Obviously, an idea can be changed into for the better or for the worse. So, I mean, I don't think that would be an argument to stop having ideas, because on the whole, I think we the human beings want to cooperate each other. That's how we probably outlived the Neanderthals, is that we're able to work more together with each other. So we naturally want to do good. So though obviously there are people with bad ideas and bad deeds, I think the majority of the time they're good ideas with good deeds. And as I said, one argument for ideas is the fact they achieve change. Then there's change for our material benefit, but also intellectual change. I think how, you know, I often think with people in organized religions, they've got to think the same thing all the time. And I think that must be dreary. If you think, ideas lead to intellectual and aesthetic stimulation, lead to stimulation in relationships. So it's not only practical things that ideas have, the major changes that you mentioned. There's little things like relationships between people that I think they keep us going. I'm surprised. I suppose Darwin must have thought about it. That's having ideas is one of the way we've evolved the way we have. I don't know, but must be very frustrating. You go back, say, 200,000 years ago, when it's thought that speech first started, probably established probably 50,000 years ago. But before that, there was a million years of individuals having ideas and not being able to communicate them with each other. That must have been awful.
I guess they did use art in those days as well. But I mean, it's interesting what you said. I mean, we talked about the big ideas that changes society in a macro way, but you talked about the little things. And sometimes when you look at people, they don't want new ideas. They get themselves into silos, churches, religion, you mentioned political parties. Surprising when I'm on social networks, how people in political parties will not go outside the box. They won't think differently. They're stuck in their silos. I mean, is that a real problem? How can we encourage people to not be afraid to be in those little boxes of security?
Well, I think that's the old mantra of travel and education. I think what you said, people probably are afraid of change. Genuine fear or stuck with the ideas of belonging to a group, they don't want to change the group. But I think the more people travel, the more educated we are, the less afraid of new things. If we go back just a few years to the beginning of the internet, what a magnificent change that is. And just about everyone's has accepted it. So if we had not wanted to change, how could we be benefiting? We couldn't be doing what we do now without it. And I think it's a wonderful exchange, medium for exchange of ideas, concepts.
And I mean, robotics as well, I guess, is now going to change the world, you know, tremendously. We talked about individual change, talked about macro change, but it can happen in a community basis, a business basis, can't it? You mentioned how you started your business, and your business began not as wanting to make money, though you wanted to make a living. It began as an idea, didn't it?
Yes, I'm fortunate. I enjoy the field I'm in. We manufacture cleaning chemicals for the industrial world, which is something I've done since 1964. And I discovered that I absolutely enjoy it. It takes you, someone once said to me, it's a real people business. It's taken me into companies from Los Angeles through to the Far East, Japan. I've never been to China, but to Japan I went to quite a lot. And it's taken me inside businesses because I like seeing how things work. So the cleaning industry, although people don't always recognize, in my view, what it is, it's great because everything has to be cleaned in one way or another. So the potential there is for me or someone doing what I do to go into any business. And as a small company, we've survived in a very competitive industry against the big companies because we're willing to accept ideas, to change them. We actively seek new ideas. I was in a lab meeting this morning when I emailed you, I said I was leaving the factory. We'd had a lab meeting, we're talking about a new project to develop a range of products which are provenly sustainable. Now that's starting with our ideas, and our customers have the idea, come to us, say, can we do this? So we're gathering ideas as how we can do it. And that will be a mixture of my experience, because as I say, I've been working in the lab since 1964, so I've got a lot of experience, but it's combining it with the new ideas which are coming through to us from suppliers and the other people in the team who are younger than me. So it's lovely from the exchange of ideas engendering, as well as working towards something which would be a practical outcome.
So is the sort of central idea of what you do in your business, the idea of wanting to work within the limits of the the planetary restrictions that are on us, sustainability, being as green as you can?
Yes, whatever you do, I believe in working within the regulations. And apart from the regulations, we do believe that we can contribute towards controlling climate change by developing products which are sustainable and reduce the carbon footprint. I know you introduced consultant to us, thank you, which we've been talking to. So we want to do things. A, we can see the regulations coming. B, our customers say the same thing, and they're asking us to, can we do this? And B, in amongst those discussions amongst ourselves, we see this is a potential. Not everyone in our industry will want to do it for one whatever reason. And that in itself provides an opportunity for us, because if we do it and it's wanted and others don't, our marketing expands. But it's not all money. I'm fortunately, my wife has got a good head for funds. I'm not that good with it, but I like creating the ideas and solving the technical problems. That's what I like to focus on.
I mean, one thing you said earlier was really interesting, that ideas are fun, they're exciting. And it's important to get people to think that, so they're not afraid of those ideas, that they're willing to get out of their silos. How exciting are ideas?
Yes, you've identified something within me, and I agree, and I hadn't thought of it quite like that. I agree with you, I do find ideas fun. If I look at a formulation or a recipe for something, my first thought was, that's great, it worked, how can I do it differently? Because I like the challenge to change, and having ideas. Sometimes I have ideas, I just have them because I want to, and they're not necessarily put into action, but it's just fun thinking about new things. And if we can instill that in others, it'll certainly help the country, because those who research, develop and innovate are the ones that countries will succeed. And I think that would be a good campaign to have, isn't it? Trying to instill fun into people. I hate it when go to a workshop and someone says, we are going to have fun. sulk in a corner. But yes, we will. That's a good point. We should teach people, or it ought to be taught, that ideas are fun. In fact, they're more. I don't drink anymore, so I can say they're more fun than going to the pub, in fact. So let's have some more ideas. Yes, good idea.
When you have ideas, you've said to me several times that you have a butterfly mind. Yeah. What do you mean by that?
Well, I hop from one thing to another. I have an idea, and then my brain goes into overdrive, and I sort of project it forward several years to potential outcomes, which is ridiculous, particularly if the idea is put on a shelf. But I like going from one thing to another. It's like being insatiable for having ideas and then putting them into practice. And then I've done this, well, that's what else can be done. And I like having several ideas on the go as well, because I find it challenging, because one thing can lead to another and they can cross-fertilise. So I think when I said a butterfly mind, I suppose I was poking fun at myself, because I'm interested in things. I like to know how things work. If someone shows me a new art form or a new bit of technology, I like to find out about it, not because I'm going to use it, but I find it interesting to see how things work. you know, who does it, why do they do it, what's it for? Like I did a course on podcasting because I found it extremely interesting. I haven't got a podcast, and I probably won't have one, but it was fascinating learning about the technology and the programs and the methods and what you, how you do it and how you set it up, what websites are available to help you. It's a whole genre and it's just delightful. New way of learning, what new field to learn about.
So, I mean, having this butterfly mind, is it something that helps you make the impossible possible?
Yes, I think yes, because I think as well as ideas being fun, I think you need to believe it's going to come about. In a way, we're talking about magic, which is changing reality by your mind. And I actually think if you have focus enough, you can achieve anything. And I think you're right. Without the belief it's going to happen, it won't happen. So having the idea is one thing, but then believing it, having a real intense focus and feeling that it's going to come about. Now, when I started the business, it was foolish. I had a terminally ill wife, had 3 kids in full-time education, had no customers, no products, nothing. But I said, let's start a business, and I did it. So that was an idea. I didn't plan it. I didn't. As soon as I start planning, things go disastrously wrong in my case. So I just did it. And fortunately for me, luck on my side, I think, and also the focus I had, I didn't countenance failing. I just knew it would be a success.
Is that what constrains some people, that the fact that if you have an idea, you've got to do it, and it's the doing of it that frightens people?
I think so. It's change, isn't it? We're you know, I like the same brand of tea in the morning, and I enjoy it so much, I don't really want to change it. So we're comfortable with the status quo. And we should step, I think it's good for everyone to step outside of what you're used to and do something a bit different. I think it's a fear. Yes, it's fear. I think we've said this before. I think it's a fear of change in itself and the fear of failure. I mean, I've failed more times than I've succeeded, and the thing to do is not worry about that. It's failing. I think I said to you before, repent of your sins, a famous biblical quote. The accurate translation is learn from your mistakes. And I think that's right. Learn, if you don't make mistakes, you really won't learn. I mean, if we all agreed with each other, there'd be no progress. So disagreement in itself leads to progress, new ideas. Failure should lead to you doing things better the next time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a great believer that failure can often lead to success. Equally, success can sometimes lead to failure. But I mean, you know, how do we get people to think that way? That don't be afraid, don't be afraid. I mean, try and put your ideas into action if you can. And also, I mean, you say you have a butterfly mind, and that must mean that you have a lot of ideas that are impractical, that are fantasy, but they are part of the process, aren't they, of opening up your mind to what can work, to what is possible.
Yes, it is. I mean, yes, I mean, not you can't be arrogant and wrong of me to say that every idea I had is going to succeed. So my way, I suppose you could say I do it the lazy way. I have 1,000 ideas, hoping one will succeed, and it's one way of doing it. But also, I'm reading a book about called Unraveling Unconscious Bias by an expert in this field, and it's quite interesting. I forget how many millions of neurons there are in our brain, and how many new millions of transactions there are each second about anything. And she's saying that's one thing why we have bias or instinct. It's the efficient way of if we waited for our brain to work it all out, we'd never do anything. So I'm losing my track of thought again, but I think it may well be that I have a better fry mind thinking of all these ideas. I'm aware of it. And it's probably the case that everyone has all these ideas at the same time. It's just for whatever reason, people aren't aware of it. But it doesn't mean to say it's not happening. I suspect it is happening. And it's just nearer the surface for me.
Yeah, I mean, I was saying how ideas sometimes people are afraid of, because they feel that if they put them into practice, that's a frightening thing. Well, me, it's the other way around. It's another frightening thing, really. Whenever I have an idea, I want to put it into practice straight away. And I can be impetuous about that. And that can be a danger too, can't it?
It is. I tend to leap at things. And these can be dangerous. And I think you've got to be skillful on your feet to get out of the danger. But that shouldn't stop you. I mean, we're all as we are. We can't change how we are. When I had personal counselling once, someone said to me, Anthony, you can't change anyone, but you can change yourself. And interestingly enough, I noticed as I changed, the people around me changed. So I think that if you are an impetuous person, as you and I are, then we learn to live with it. You know, we get it. And I think as long as you can see early enough that your impetuousness is leading you into disaster, so you pull back before the disaster happens. But yes, I mean, but even that is failure again, and it shouldn't stop us doing things. And you just got to accept that we do make mistakes. We learn from our mistakes. If you don't do, you won't find out. If you don't have new ideas, things will be static. I'd hate to live in a world where things don't change and where people criticize. And another thing, I think we worry about what other people think about us. And if you're someone having new ideas, which are outside the norm, you can understand that attracting criticism, because you're bucking the odds. Some people assume that if you do things differently from me, you're criticizing me because you're not saying the same thing as I am, so you must think that I'm wrong, which isn't the case. It's just they're two different things coexisting.
That's quite interesting, because you know, I've seen that when you have ideas, people think you're criticizing them. They think that you're criticizing the status quo. Well, you are in a way, but you're not criticizing the people. And I don't know how you can get people to be open-minded and not to worry about ideas and not to think it's a condemnation of them, but to think it's a part of the exploration of life. It's important to get them to feel that way, isn't it?
Yes, I think so. And it's... It is our part, it's our nature. I do what I do because I'm human, at least I think I am, and it's my nature, and I don't think I'm different from any other human, so it's nature for me, it's nature for everyone else. And I think one of the reasons is, when I made a remark earlier that dictators shoot poets because they're the ones that have ideas, I don't think governments like people with ideas because they're out of control. It's almost anarchy. And I think that's one of the reasons why this is dreadful oppression on women. I mean, I was reading an article today where 68% of football fans interviewed were against women playing football. They think it shouldn't be, women shouldn't be involved in sport. Well, that's the Taliban talking. I mean, it's awful. And I think that it's, the control of women and the control of ideas is the same. The people in power are afraid, because new ideas will rock the boat.
That's an interesting observation, you know, the relationship of ideas to power. They don't necessarily go together. People in power want to maintain their power, and ideas that sometimes go against what they're doing or what they think is right challenges them. Power tends to, you know, suppress ideas, whether it's at a national or even at a local level in government terms.
Yes, I think the people in charge want to maintain the power so they can't have people having their own minds, being independent, having their own thoughts, having their own ideas, having the temerity to think of something which is actually better than the people in power are doing. Yes, I think that it may be that's what we've got to change. You know, I said, you asked me the question, and I said, I think travel and education, which is what everyone says, but maybe what we should do is work on the governments to encourage local and central government to accept the fact that ordinary people can have ideas, should have ideas, and they are beneficial to the state. And they mean to themselves threaten the power of the government, if the government harnesses it, it will increase the status of everybody.
Yeah, I mean, that would be, I think, an uphill struggle. But I think you're right, it's absolutely important. But I mean, tell me, I mean, has your excitement about ideas, is that one of the things that's led to your passion for poetry? Because poetry sometimes expresses ideas and insights, and even sometimes, as Wordsworth used to call it, our unfought thoughts. Is that excitement of ideas something that makes poetry so important for you?
It is, yes, because when you're writing poetry, searching for different ways of expressing something is a way of finding new ideas. But I just read a book by a Swedish linguist who wanted to examine why did speech start? Why do we start speaking? And he went through a whole series of things, and speech doesn't actually help us survive as such. We can exist as we did for millions of years without it. But his idea was, and I agree with him, that the reason we develop big speech is because individuals want to exchange information with each other. That's something within us that we want to exchange ideas, not only exchange love, but just communication. We're driven to communicate with another. Now, that in itself doesn't help us with survival. So it's not a something that Darwin would approve of, but it just happens, and it's probably an accident. That's a genetic change, quite interesting genetic changes. The work for doing one thing, but it also affects hundreds of other things. And one of the hundreds of other things which came about was our desire to communicate with each other. So poetry, I think, like music, is a psychic communication. It takes your message directly through to the brain of the other person, bypassing all their inner prejudices and carapace and whatever. So I think poetry for me, there's two things. One, it enables me to communicate, which is what I'm driven to do. And secondly, it is the thinking process that develop new ideas. Yes, it helps with ideas and communicating ideas.
I mean, that's interesting too, because I mean, as you argued, language can very often constrain and distort ideas because language is not adequate. And I suppose poetry and art in general is a way of finding, us trying to find a way rather to get those things that are deep inside us, those feelings, those intuitive energies that we have, into a form of words that can communicate. And that's exciting, but it's quite a struggle to do, isn't it?
It is. It's not only different languages. I think it's 6,000 extant languages at the moment. But we don't always listen to each other. So even with language, we have difficulty in communicating. And poetry, I think, someone can understand the message without listening, because it goes straight in, and there's an unconscious understanding as well as a conscious understanding. But as you know, I sent you the link. I've been talking to the people at the Brimsdown Primary School, which is a centre of excellence for the British Sign Language, because my poem Londinium has been translated now into British Sign Language. And it's fascinating talking to Tina Kemp, who is a signer, that people signing, poets who sign, don't write in the same way as poets who use words. It's probably more natural, because I think we think in metaphors, myself, and the words are what we use to bring the metaphor out to people, and they're like little building blocks. Whereas when you sign, you have to act it. And so watching a poet signing a poem is really fascinating, with the whole body's involved in it. And the way, as I say, the deaf poet composes is different. So I think that isn't another example of my butterfly mind. I'm finding that fascinating. I'd like to find out about it.
That is fascinating, because in a way, it's using art, isn't it, as a form of performance to communicate with communities and people that you want to communicate with, but you find difficult doing it in conventional ways. And that's a very powerful tool, isn't it?
It is. I think that's and it's a good idea to look to communicate with as many different medium as you can, as is possible. That way you reach more people, I think. And I couldn't justify to you why it's important for me to, for instance, to communicate to people. It just is. And I think it's that drive within us to exchange ideas. We don't have to justify it. It's just what we want to do. And I think the more different ways you can do it, the better it is. And it's more satisfying, and it's fun. In that word you used earlier, it is actually fun doing it.
Yeah, but art and ideas and indeed action are intricately related, aren't they? Because science, the pursuit of business, community engagement often depend upon the art of ideas. And ideas are not just a sort of chaotic flow, though they can be. They can be an art in their own right, and they can then influence all those actions in society that we need to see.
Yes, and I think this is relevant, what you said, and because as you know, mine is a small business. And in small businesses, we think differently. Almost the business itself must be an extension of the shareholders as a personal thing, whereas the bigger the business becomes impersonal, because it can't represent the person with the original idea, because there are just too many players in it. You've got the accountants, the lawyers, salespeople, the administrators, the IT people, and they're all, the bigger you get, the less personal the company becomes. It's probably why they don't have as many, I'm going to get shot down there, I probably don't have as many good ideas as small businesses, because they're no longer personal. It's no longer fun. You're doing it because you're paid to do it. Whereas in a small business, you do it because it's fun. You get paid. Yes, you need money to pay the mortgage, but it's also fun. And you've got the human interaction, which is genuine human interaction. You don't have to worry about office politics or impressing the boss or anything like that. It's a genuine human interaction, which in itself is fun. I love talk. I went to up to London last Friday, and on the way back, I noticed in the tube or the overground, there's a guy sitting off us opposite with a guitar case. And being nosy, I tried to see what the guitar was. It was a Gretsch. Now I've got one, a 1969 Nashville Gretsch, gold plated and everything. And I said to him, oh, I've got one of those. And he started talking about it. He lives in the West Country. And I said, yes, I had to take mine to Harlow to have the electronics looked at. I said, oh, I was born in Harlow. And his mate next to him said, yes, I'm in the band as well. And they got off the lady sitting next to Valerie said, oh, I play the blues guitar as well. So there were four of us sitting together, having a really super little conversation about something and an interaction. And that sort of thing goes on in small companies, but it doesn't go on in big companies.
Yeah, no, you said that actually in the last interview we did, and you said you'd be afraid of being shot down then, so you've said it twice now. And that's okay. I think you're right. In those smaller groups, you have the freedom, you don't have the constraints on you. But one of the constraints we do have now is we live in incredibly turbulent times, one of the most dangerous in the history of humankind, in a way, because of all sorts of things, nuclear proliferation, climate change, and so on. How important is it to not, you know, go into the bunker and put the lid down, but try and have ideas and try and develop positive ideas in a time that is, you know, badly affecting us all?
We've got to continue. So a lot of things are outside of our individual control. We can work collectively towards, say, climate change, but that aside, we can't give in to fear. We've got to carry on. I mean, when I was growing up, there was a CND, we were for people, the atom bomb and the hydrogen bomb. And Valerie is telling me a story. She used to quite consciously, without fear, think, if the warning go, I think we were told you had 3 minutes warning before the atom bomb fell on London. And she used to have milestones on the walk to school saying, well, if I got to that, I could actually get home before the atom bomb fell. And so we were living with probably a greater potential for elimination in the times of the atom bomb. It's still probably still there, but it was a more general fear then. So it's not the same, but it's the same feeling. So I would say that I grew up feeling exactly as people feel now, but for a different reason. And all you can do is carry on in real life, just acting positively and kindly. And as I do believe in magic, I think enough of us focus our minds with honest intent, change will happen. It will come about.
Yeah. It used to be 4 minutes, by the way. So if you'd realised that at the time, you would have had more time to get home before it happened. But, you know, I mean, that's really interesting about being positive and not being in the bunker and having ideas and trying to change things. I mean, we've sort of come to the end of our 30 minutes now, just gone over, which is good. You know, if anybody wanted to know about more about your ideas, your various interests from business to poetry, then how would they make contact with you?
Well, my website is antonyfisherpoet.com. There's a contact me on there. And it's in view of what's been going on since lockdown, the interviews with you, I realise I should change the website it's got my poetry up, music up, and photographs in the blog, so it's still interesting to visit. But if people want to contact me, that do it through that. And the company, it's the main company is Chela, chela.co.uk. You can see what sort of business we do.
Okay, well, I mean, that's great. So people will know how to contact you. And the poetry site, actually, if anybody goes there, I hope they do, is really, really good. And I mean, I know your work in developing it, Enfield Poets, has been, you know, important. And it's become a great site. And there is in Enfield a huge number of poets. And I think having that site and putting their work on it is great, and getting their ideas over too. So thank you. I'm
running out of time, Francis, but that's a good example. See, Vera and I started Enfield Poets in 2000 with the late Jane Elder. And we did it because we wanted somewhere to read our poetry, to read it to others and for others to read. That's why we did it. But when we moved to the Dugdale, we were working with Paul Everett, it became bigger, and people outside of Enfield saw it and started coming. And now, because of that, it wasn't consciously done, it just happened. The poetry is formed in an important part of so many activities in Enfield now. I know with your festival you have with NCAF, the poetry formed an important part. And I think poetry is underestimated. I think everyone likes poetry, just there's so many different sorts of poetry that we don't talk to each other. Poets don't talk to each other. So everyone likes poetry, and because it's a powerful tool for communication, very powerful tool.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, you have done a great deal of work in order to, pursue the love of poetry and to involve so many other people as well. Anyhow, thank you very much for doing this, because it has been interesting. And I do think it's important to talk about ideas and to encourage people to have them, and to encourage people to experiment with them and to see how they can work with others to put some of their ideas into practice, because, you know, the combination of ideas and action is a critical and important thing. But the first thing is to have the ideas. And that's what you talked about. So thanks very much again, Anthony. It's been another really interesting webinar and interview to do. And it's great that you've joined us today. So we'll finish this webinar interview now.
Thank you.